All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
Program, Bob Gould.
Okay, here we go once again. Well, we had to let the orchestra do their thing, and we had to do our thing right here. You know, this is live radio, folks. We don't do any do-overs. You're talking to and listening to Veterans Radio, Bob Gould right here. It's been a while since I've been here in the commander seat, and with me is my wingman, and that's Dale Throneberry, 195th Assault Helicopter. How are you doing, Dale? Great to be here.
I'm doing just
together,
fine, huh? Bobby. Bobby G, as they used to say, right, back in your DJ days.
Yes.
And, yeah, it's good to be here. It's a great day. It's a great day here in Michigan. And we want to make sure that we send out our best wishes and our prayers to everybody down in Florida right now. And, you know, we've got a lot of friends down there that are suffering from Irma coming on shore. We want to say, you know, let Bob Gillette know that we're thinking about him and everything that's going on with his home down in Bonita Springs.
Well, send our prayers to everybody.
And so actually it's kind of a theme for today's program, because our first guest after we take our break is going to be Team Rubicon. And for those of you that are not familiar with Team Rubicon, these are veterans. These are groups of veterans, male, female, and they go off to all of these natural disasters and help people out because it's the best thing to do. They're able to continue serving by doing this, and this is what they want to do. So anyway, our prayers go out to all those people down in Florida, and as that storm continues further and further north, we'll be thinking about you too.
And there is coming up, we have the Veterans Summit coming up Wednesday, September 13th at 9 noon, Madonna University, Kresge Hall. What about that, Dale?
That's right. You've got all the information
in
front of you.
Well, they hold this darn thing every year.
It's a veteran service.
They hold it every year. Topics include property taxes, updates on benefits, health care updates. Learn about the Freedom Center, Fisher House, Stiggy's Dogs.
We had Stiggy's Dogs. Stiggy's Dogs.
Is that the South Lion guy?
No. This is up in Howell, Michigan, and these are the people that provide the dogs for, what do they call them? Service dogs. Service dogs. For veterans.
Oh, okay.
And so I don't know if they train them, but I know that they go and they get the dogs and then they provide them to the veterans. So it's kind of a cool thing. Sticky Dogs. Go to the veteransradiowebsite.net, type in Sticky's Dogs, and you'll find the show that we did on them.
Or you can go to CantonFoundation.org, CantonFoundation.org. That's going to be Wednesday, September 13th, 9 till noon, Madonna University. Please go to CantonFoundation.org. Also, this week, folks, on a serious note, this is Suicide Prevention Month. I'm sorry.
Right, it is Suicide Prevention Month, and we're going to be talking to a young woman after the break again that's going to be talking about that. There's an organization that's out there. Let me find it here real quick. Hope for the Warriors, and Hope for the Warriors is putting together a program. They're going to have a weekly online streaming video instructional type of program for family and caregivers to what signs to look for and so forth. I don't want to steal her thunder, but Vicki Lane is going to be on from that organization in just a moment. So,
and we here at Veterans Radio want to encourage everybody, if you have something in your family that may be affected by suicide, please do something. Don't wait. Okay?
Right, yeah, don't.
Go.
Don't regret not asking somebody, not forcing somebody to get help. We've had incidents in our own family where we had somebody basically drank himself to death, and because nobody intervened. And so if you see something out of the ordinary with your friend or your families, ask them. You know, it's here to get help. Again, you can go to our website or the VA website, and the Suicide Crisis Hotline is on there. Call that number, press number 1, and there are counselors there to talk to you. If you, you know, if you think something's going on in your life and it's not worth it, death is not the answer, folks. It's not the answer.
Okay. Well, we're going to be right back. We're going to take our first break. We're going to be back with the
Team Rubicon.
Rubicon folks. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Talk 1600. Don't go away. Okay, we're back on Veterans Radio right here on Talk 1600. Dale, you have something from the Rubicon people.
I do. And hopefully joining us on the line right now is Michigan State Administrator Fred LaPointe. And Fred, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you, Dale, and thank you, Bob, for having me on. Really appreciate the opportunity to be able to talk to your folks about Team Rubicon.
I think it's really important, especially with what happened last week in Texas and what's happening right now in Florida. So can you tell our audience a little bit about Team Rubicon?
Sure. Team Rubicon is an international nonprofit disaster response organization. We unite the skills and experiences of military veterans with first responders and volunteers so that we can rapidly deploy disaster response teams free of charge to communities affected by disaster across the country. TR currently maintains a roster of over 50,000 volunteers able to deploy throughout the U.S. We also have international partners as well, TR Canada, TR UK, TR Australia, and also TR Norway.
Can you tell us a little bit about how Team Rubicon got started? It sounds like it's just a great opportunity for veterans to give back.
Sure. Team Rubicon originated back in during the earthquake in Haiti in 2010. Our founder, Jake Wood, and another fellow Marine, William McNulty, were sitting home. They had been finished with their time in service, were looking for a way to serve again, and the earthquake occurred down there, leaving millions of people or thousands of people without homes and without medical treatment. They felt very strongly that they wanted to do something about it, and so they decided to go down there, despite being discouraged by a number of other governmental and aid organizations not to do it. Went down there and were able to provide crucial aid and gear and medical treatment to the people of Port-au-Prince. And that's basically how we got our start.
Okay, let's suppose, maybe not me, but maybe some younger people, let's suppose I wanted to sign up with Team Rubicon. What's the process I would go through to do that?
Absolutely. You can just go to our website, which is www.teamrubiconusa.org. And on that particular webpage, you'll be able to find all the facts, whether it's to volunteer and sign up with Team Rubicon, or if you wanted to make a donation to Team Rubicon to help us continue our mission.
And I understand that you do background checks on everybody and at your expense, not at my expense, and to make sure that everybody's legit. Do you have to be a veteran to join Team Rubicon?
No, you don't. We utilize the skills and experiences not only of veterans, but also first responders and also civilians. That's the great thing about TR. Probably 70% of the membership of TR is veterans, so we are a veterans-based organization, and that's also why we say disasters are our business, but veterans are our passion.
Right, yeah. Disasters are your business. It's true. I'm sure you've been very busy over the last couple of weeks.
Yes, we have, especially with Harvey. We deployed 6 floodwater rescue teams down in Houston and Beaumont areas. That was the first time that TR actually did water rescue operations. Our organization's search and rescue efforts began on Monday, August 28th, and they're beginning to wrap up. As of Friday, September 1st, we had conducted 73 floodwater rescues and safely evacuated 43 animals.
Well, that's cool. So is the organization already in Florida, or are you waiting for the waters to subside a little?
We have assessment teams on standby. ready to go in as soon as it's safe for them to do so. We have a number of folks stationed down in Atlanta right now at the ready, including boats and stuff if we need to.
Well, it sounds like that, again, I want to remind our audience that this is a great organization, and it's one that we support here at Veterans Radio. And I see that there's kind of a matching thing going on with donations for the short term. Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with the matching part of it, but I am familiar with a way folks can make donations to TR. Again, they can go to the TeamRubiconUSA.org webpage, or they can also text Harvey, H-A-R-V-E-Y. They can text that to 87872 to make a donation.
Okay, and it was PX. I'm looking at your website right now, and it just caught me with this. It flipped. Okay, PXG extends 1 million match challenge for Hurricane Harvey relief. Double your support for Hurricane Harvey relief in Texas and across the Gulf Coast. So if you make a donation to Team Rubicon right now, the opportunity there is to double it.
Yes. Yes.
Sounds pretty cool to me. We've been talking with Fred LaPointe here as our Michigan State Administrator. So you are in Michigan right now, Fred, or are you off on
the train? Yes, I am. I'm up in Manistee.
Manistee. Oh, okay. All right. Well, hopefully we don't have any emergencies up there.
Hopefully not.
And so we've been telling people that, how beautiful Michigan is, that we have no sharks, no salt, and now we can say no hurricanes.
Correct.
Everybody come back.
Absolutely.
Yeah, a little dark humor there. But anyway, so Fred, I want to thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio. And if you have any announcements that you want to make, don't hesitate to contact us, and we'll be more than happy to get the word out for you.
Thank you very much. Deeply appreciated.
Okay, thank you. That was Fred LaPointe with the Michigan State Administrator for Team Rubicon, which is really a cool organization.
What a cool
idea. I love the concept of the whole thing. And there are many of these organizations around the country right now that are instituted or instigated, I guess you could say, by veterans from the Iraq-Afghanistan conflicts, and they're looking for some way to give back. And just what a great way to use the skills that you've learned as far as logistics. We're always talking about the logistics things that we learned when we were in the service.
And now's the time to use them.
And now is the time to use them. And it kind of gives you a gradual way to get yourself back into the civilian community, but also you can keep those contacts that were so important to you when you were in the service. All right, so I got
another example of your defense dollars working for you. Hmm?
That's
not really,
right.
No, sometimes people say, well, the Army, what do they do every day? Well, they prepare for things like this.
That's right.
And you have the Army Corps of Engineers that build dikes and things to prevent flooding.
I forgot to mention that. Everybody that came out to support the VVA 310 pig roast, thank you very much. We had a great turnout there today. Picked up a lot of information, talked to a lot of people, and picked up some interesting stories. In fact, one was that I was talking to was an Army engineer up in Tu Corps in Vietnam, and he was telling stories about, how they have to build this stuff in 130-degree weather. Just like Gary Lilly, he's a CB. It was always hotter wherever he was.
And it was that way at the air show they had.
Yeah.
I spent all day for 4 days, and never... Always had people to talk to, and the other military folks wanted to share their stories with you, and that was really
cool. I know.
It's
great
that
they
a lot.
Do that.
That was really cool.
All right. Well, we've got a serious issue to talk about here right now, and that is that it is Suicide Prevention Month. And joining us on the line right now is Vicki Lane, who is with Hope for the Warriors. And Vicki, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, both you, Dale and Bob. Thank you.
Thank you, and it's a pleasure to meet you on the phone.
Yeah, thank you.
So tell me what Hope for the Warriors is. When I looked up the website, I was really shocked. It's great. It looks like a great organization.
It's a wonderful organization. It was actually founded in 2006 on board Marine Corps Base Camp Lejeune by some Marine Corps wives who noticed that firsthand they found out that when their family members came back from war, they didn't quite have the support that they needed. So they started out very small with a race just to bring some recognition and some awareness, and that has blossomed into a nationwide organization that provides just a plethora of different services to veterans, service members, and their families.
Well, I think it's so important that organizations are there because veterans are very hesitant sometimes to reach out for help anyway.
And, yes, we are.
And if it's, especially if it's a family member that says, hey, you know, we got this organization, why don't we go talk to somebody and see what's happening? Because I know that approximately 20 veterans a day are committing suicide, and that's all ages. That's not just the current crop of veterans.
That's right.
Yeah. So what is your organization up to as far as these training videos?
Well, we went to a seminar several years ago that was kind of hosted by Michelle Obama about knowing the five signs and what to look for if somebody was having some concerns about suicide. And we thought the training was wonderful, but wanted to take it one step further to kind of give people an idea of what to do when they do notice those signs. So we fell upon the concept of QPR, which is question, persuade, and refer. And that takes it, like I said, a step further. So we help individuals know what to look for, what types of signs, verbal cues can be indirect or direct, and different types of situations that you will notice and changes in individuals that may be considering suicide. And if you see that, how to approach them and the importance of asking that difficult question. A lot of people are concerned that if they ask somebody if they're considering suicide, that it may force them into it or put the idea into their head, and that's absolutely been shown not to be true. Study after study says that if you ask somebody if they're considering suicide, that can be enough right there to stop that process.
Mm-hmm. Can you, what exactly are these training programs about, and how do they work?
Well, they are, right now we are having one every Tuesday, every other Tuesday at noon, and the following Tuesdays at 7 p.m. to try to get as many people access as possible. And it's going absolutely through the training, the QPR suicide awareness training. And it helps people realize that it doesn't take an expert, it doesn't take a professional to help if somebody is considering suicide, and that anybody, absolutely anybody, can be that gatekeeper to keep mm-hmm. someone from killing themselves.
And so these are available every Tuesday
for the rest of the month? They're available every Tuesday. Yes, mm-hmm. That's right. The actual sign-up is on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/hopeforthewarriors. And I was also going to just provide my email address in case anybody had any questions about it and wanted to get any more information.
Okay, and also, what might that be?
It's VLANE. @hopeforthewarriors.org.
Okay, so let's see, where did I put that? I know I have it here somewhere. I got all these things from Mike to talk about everything, and I know your email's on there again. So it's, could you repeat it one more time?
Sure. VLANE.
Yep.
At hopeforthewarriors.org.
Okay, and the Facebook page is facebook.com/hopeforthewarriors, right?
Hope for the Warriors.
Hope for the Warriors, sorry.
Hope for the Warriors, right.
Okay.
And then also our website at www.hopeforthewarriors.org. It has just a lot of information about the different services that we provide, anywhere from transition services to clinical health and wellness, sports and rec, community engagement, those types of things that can really help people who may be down in their luck or even considering suicide, giving them a little bit of hope of some other things that they can also have access to.
Okay. I also see here that it's not necessarily 100% just for veterans or military. Is
it? The training is not. Absolutely anybody okay. can.
Anybody. So
the,
if anybody out there listening, you can go
absolutely
to Hopes for the Warriors website, and then maybe you can get some help there. I think it's a great opportunity. And again, it's another worthwhile organization, and like all of these organizations that are out there, we need public funding, and so we need people to make donations. And I think that's one of the great things about our country is that we do take care of people, and we don't wait for the government to do it. So I think that's a great opportunity for people to help out. Do you have any other events coming up that we should be aware of, or?
Well, we are also involved in the this hurricane stuff going on right now. We mm-hmm. are supporting our current clients with Harvey. We've reached out to our clients in Texas and are going to be doing the same thing in Florida and in Puerto Rico to make sure that they are getting the assistance that they need. So So it's going to be a busy week, I think.
Okay. Well, I think it's a great program that you've got going, Vicki. It's Vicki Lane with Hope for the Warriors. It's hopeforthewarriors.org, and you can get all the information that you want there. Thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, and we will have you back on sometime in the future to talk more about your organization. How's that?
Sounds wonderful. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Vicki.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, that's so important.
It is
what
important.
What is the suicide rate now for?
Almost 20 a day.
How many was it?
20 a day.
20 a day.
That's just veterans.
Are just the ones that are reported.
Yeah, too. that's not across the a country. Not I don't want to use the word civilians. I mean across the population, but it's just outrageous. And I think that as she's pointed out and other things, another program that I'm working on is how do we, intercede, because as I said earlier on, death is not the answer. There's got to be something that hopefully can get you out of whatever funk that you're in or whatever the reason that you think that you're not worthy, as they say. No, you're worth something to everybody. And so we've got to do what we can to help people. And with organizations like this and the Team Rubicons and all the other veterans things out there, we want to make sure that if you are out there and you're contemplating it, don't, because I got a phone number here for you just real quick. And that's the Veterans Crisis Line. And it's 1-800-273-8255. When they answer, press 1 and they'll take you right to a veterans counselor. And help you out. You probably need somebody to talk to, so just talk to them and maybe they can help you. That number again is 800-273-8255, press 1. So what's coming up next, Robert?
Well, I've got something. I think I'm going to bring this gentleman on right now, right? Okay, I'm looking at Derek. Derek, are we all cool on this? We're ready to go. And on the line, and we will bring this gentleman on, then go to break and come back. But with me right now is Dennis Powers. Dennis Powers was a Marine in 1963-64. He was in Vietnam. So he was in the Marine Corps at that time. It just happened to be at the same time. I was not in the Marine Corps, but I was in the Army. I was in the Marine Corps then. He went to law school, jurist, judge, and right now he's a mediator in Oakland County. Veterans Radio would like to welcome Dennis Powers to Veterans Radio. Dennis?
Well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
Well, it's so nice to have you, and we had, I want to tell the folks, when I was at the air show, Dennis just sort of sat down at the table in a wonderful uniform, looked great, still looked good in it, and he began to tell his story about being in Vietnam. Now, before we go any further, folks, some of this stuff is classified after all these years. Yes, so we will be talking about some things, but we won't be divulging. There we are. We won't be divulging any classified stuff. But I talking to Dale, who was a Slicks pilot in Vietnam, and both Dale and Dennis were in.
We can't say redacted.
Oh, you can't talk about it either?
It's redacted.
Okay.
No, I can. Well, Dale, we were over there.
I just want to tell you what this stuff was like, folks. Dale flew into somewhere else besides Vietnam with no markings.
True.
And what else? What? Did you have anything on your uniform?
No, we removed all identification, no dog tags, no nothing. I mean, we had a chit that was like a silk American flag, and on the back it had in 5 or 6 different dialects that if you helped us get back to the friendly lines, the American government would give you X amount of dollars. I forget what it was, but that was the only thing we carried.
So, you mean you were there to rescue pilots?
Yeah,
right.
Well, pilots and other people that ran into trouble. That was our job.
And you know how serious this was, folks? If Dale would have been discovered by the bad guys, it would have been that. He would not have been treated as a military person. Probably would have been shot on sight.
Well, I don't know, but the American government told us that they would disavow any knowledge of our mission. Because we had people that were shot down in Cambodia, and they were listed as MIAs.
What do you think of all that, Dennis?
I think that he's spot on with what he's talking about, because the helicopters that came in to pick up our intelligence were unmarked helicopters, and they were in and out quickly. Mm-hmm. I did have my dog tags, but I wasn't sure where I was at the time. I was west of Cameron Bay and a little bit northwest of Saigon. Near as I could tell, later on in life, I was near a place called Lac Nai. But I think I was really across the border into Cambodia. But mm-hmm. you don't know because they don't tell you. It's a need-to-know basis.
That's
and
right.
Well, there's no road signs, right?
Well, they would never tell us where we were going.
Shop at Hanoi. Hanoi Joel's. No. Boy, what do we got? Derek, 2 minutes? 1 minute. All right. So I'm going to wrap up this first half. Dennis, don't go away. Get a cup of coffee, whatever. And we're going to be back with Dennis. And then we're going to talk about the shadow government. I've never heard that before. Have you, Dale?
I had, but I didn't know what it was until I looked it up after you told me who our guest was.
And did you find something?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll get
two
back.
Of them. There's one then and there's one now.
Derek, is the orchestra ready to give us our bump music? Why don't we bring that up? The guys are getting up. We'll be right back. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here on Talk Radio 1600. Don't go away. Go United States Marines, and I have a Marine on the program with us. Dale and I are talking with Dennis Powers. Dennis Powers was in the Marine Corps and in Vietnam, 63-64. That's before the Gulf of Tonkin.
It was. So, I was in high school.
Yeah. I was just getting out of the Army, and Dennis was in law school, was a jurist, a judge. He's a mediator right now. But back in the day, back in Nam, he was casing the shadow government in South Vietnam. Dennis, what's a shadow government?
You know, I didn't know what it was then either. I just learned from the captain I was working with, and along with the Cambodians and the Vietnamese, that they were looking for what I would call traitors. There is and later on I learned to describe it as a giant squid with tentacles everywhere. So you had the so-called elected, or however they became into power in Saigon, the Dim Brothers, but there was another group of people that were really running all of South Vietnam that were reporting to the Viet Cong and to the North Vietnamese. We have to always remember there were two elements that we were fighting. And one was the North Vietnamese later on, I think from 65 on, and I was gone. But early on, we were fighting the Viet Cong. And the Viet Cong were totally different types of action than they had against the North Vietnamese. So it was we were trying to ferret out the Viet Cong inside the Saigon government, who would pass on all intelligence, make decisions, stop our aircraft, stop whatever they could do to disrupt the government of South Vietnam. And ultimately, I think they were responsible for the murders of Dim, who was the ruler, and his brother. Because, shortly when I was there, shortly thereafter, both he and his brother get murdered. 3 weeks later, Kennedy gets assassinated, and I'm 19 years old. I'm like, what the heck is going on in the world? It was quite an experience, trying to find out what was going on in Saigon and who was the good guy and who was the bad guy.
It was really strange when you think about it, because everybody blamed the Kennedy administration for these assassinations. And then, as you said, Kennedy gets assassinated. So, what's sinister group is behind all of this? You know, the Viet Cong was a local grown organization before the North Vietnamese Army came down. They were the ones that were doing all the fighting, and they were infiltrating everything because it always seemed like they always knew where American troops were concentrating.
Well, they knew because of what was going on in so-called the shadow government, which was, as I said, they were more powerful than the actual government that was in place at the time. They would pass all the information on. For instance, we did some training at a French, it wasn't French any longer, but the Michelin rubber plantation, which again was northwest of Saigon, and somehow they seemed to know when we were doing the training, they seemed to know when we were moving out, and we were training, of course, the South Vietnamese Army. So it was kind of funny in use of weaponry, but they always seemed to know what was going on, and I always wondered how they knew. And then I was moved into this other posting where I was providing security for this listening post, which was quite a ways from where I was doing the training. But it's fascinating how fast they knew what was going on, and you couldn't ever see them. That's why I came up with the word a long time ago, shadow, because you can't really see a shadow. They're there and they're gone.
Well, what methods did you use to find out who were the bad guys?
Well, everything in that day was not teletype or anything else. It was all radio communications. And sometimes it was code, and sometimes it was in different languages. The captain I reported to could speak like four or five different languages, but also in a listening post were Vietnamese, Cambodians, and there were also people, Laotians. And that whole history of French Indochina, it's got such a history. It's incredible. In the hatred between amongst the different nations on the French side, much less what the British had in Siam, which was just an incredible situation over there. But we would listen, and they would send back the intelligence on that helicopter, go back into, I'm assuming, to Saigon, where the intelligence group was. They would try and decipher what's going on, and people would disappear. Now, I was told that our CIA was very active at that time. Mm-hmm. The military was not involved, to my knowledge, of any assassinations. We had our snipers, but we didn't get involved in assassinations. But people would disappear. Well, I think that's how they handled it.
Dennis, when you found these people, did you, lack of another word, did you dispatch them?
Well, no, because I never found them. I was like a carrier pigeon. You could call me a lapdog, a carrier pigeon. I would take the information from the listening post, give it to the chopper pilot. He'd take off with it, and then it would be handled. I mean, my duty was to not only be a carrier pigeon, but to be a canary on search in the destroy missions just to keep the post safe. So we'd walk point, but that's all I did. I mean, I wasn't anywhere near smart enough to be in the intelligence part of the operation, nor did I even understand all that was going on at the time. It wasn't until later that I was able to put things more together, shall we say.
Yeah, you were the tip of the spear.
Exactly, and the rest of the spear we never knew because they don't tell you what's going on. And
no.
It wasn't a thing that you're going to be captured in a POW, because then there were no POWs. If you're found in a field by the Viet Cong, they're going to kill you.
Right.
It's that simple. There are no prisoners. There's no nothing. And that was part of my duty, is to look for booby traps and make sure that the listening post was safe no matter what the odds were.
You mentioned in your our list of questions that you were, you know, that you did walk point. Could you explain what walking point means to civilians?
Yeah, to a civilian, it is you're out maybe a quarter click from the rest of your squad, and you have an area which you've been assigned to. In other words, everything is on a map. You have your sectors, and you have to keep that map clear or safe, if you would. And you go, the point, they send a squad of men out. A squad can be composed of anywhere from 11 to 13 men, or so I guess sometimes more, but we had 11 in our squad. And one of us would go out, which was me, they called me the canary. But they sent me out because of my habits. They felt safe with my habits, and I felt safe with my habits, and it worked well for the squad, and it worked well for me.
Okay, so you were out in front of everybody, 100 yards or so, looking for the bad guys before the bad guys found you.
Exactly. No, you know, you think you're about a quarter click out, a half click, but how do you know? You're in the bush, you have a map, but, you know, you're trying to figure out where you are, so you really go by your watch. When you leave the squad and you go out and you're 5 minutes out ahead of them, mm-hmm. you know, you figure about a quarter click. For those on the that don't know, a click is about 0.62 of a mile. Mm-hmm. And the word click came about because on our mortars and on our weaponry, machine guns, etc., you turn one click for elevation and to determine where the round was going to land. And so that's where clicks came about. And then in Vietnam, it was a very normal term for the Army, the Marine Corps.
Yeah.
Everyone, we used the word click.
We had a gentleman on a few years back who walked point for 2 years. My first question to him was, why did you do that? And he said it was the safest place on the squad. Tell us about that.
You know, the thing is, when you're doing it, if you have yourself together, you have to remember, you are so scared. At least, I should say, Dennis Powers was so scared. There's others that say, you know, I heard someone say, you know, when it gets really tough going, the tough get going. Well, I kept looking for Mr. Tough Guy. I never found him out there. And I was perhaps the slowest point walker going. But my advantages were is I did not smoke. So if I didn't mm-hmm. smoke, there was no cigarette smoke to smell. I didn't drink, so usually I had a clear head about me. And I didn't use any kind of drugs. So that kept things relatively safe for me in terms of thinking. And the rest of the men really appreciated that fact. That I'd go out there and I wasn't worried about my cigarette. The worst I was doing was eating a Hershey bar, and probably more than one Hershey bar. But that was my biggest weakness. Other than that, I'd put the wrappers in my pocket, and I'd be looking for the punji stick in pits, for the snake pits. I'd be looking for the grenades in a can. I'd looking for the tripwires, and I'd look for the cartridge traps, whatever I could find that they had rigged. Because any souvenirs, the Viet Cong would rig anything. They'd rig a flag. They'd rig anything they'd think American would want to take home as a souvenir would be more or less likely booby-trapped. If you came across something, you'd say, oh, that really is nice. I'm going to go get that. Well, you better not get that because it's going to maybe cost you an arm or your life.
Well, that certainly would have my attention if I were walking point. What I remember the gentleman talking about was the person behind you walking, as you're walking point, the person behind is looking to the left. And the person behind him, in other words, the third person in the line, is looking to the right. And you're looking up front. So you got people looking to your sides, and you got the front. Why don't you tell us a little about that, how you felt secure or you didn't feel secure?
Well, we didn't do it that way. We didn't use a three-point man in our squad. We used a one-point man, and it was always looking to the left, to the right. But I moved slowly, and I'd look for anything out of place. It doesn't take you long to learn to watch out for snakes, watch out for centipedes, watch out for everything else. But you have to look for something out of place, the way the Viet Cong rigged the booby traps. In other words, there'd be brush that wouldn't be quite right. There'd be broken sticks. You'd have to find something. For instance, if I saw a path going and I saw, you know, Vietnamese using the path, it looked like they were just farmers that were using the path. So I could more or less assume that they're going up and down that path, that it's going to be relatively a safe path. But we're not going to walk down the path because you walk down the path could be an ambush. Mm-hmm. So you're going through the brush, and that's where it became very difficult. And any of those that have ever walked point know exactly what I'm talking about. You have to look for booby traps all the time. And I was fortunate I didn't run into any, and the ones that I did I was able to mark so that the squad coming after me could clearly see, stay away from that area.
Dennis, how long did it take you to acclimate yourself to being somebody on point, to do the things that you were just talking about? I mean, you really aren't prepared for this, folks. So you have to prepare yourself. Tell us about that.
Well, you prepare yourself by worrying and by thinking, but you never get acclimated to it. At least I did not. Some of my other fellow Marines did get acclimated. They claimed they were more at ease, but I was never at ease. I was always concerned as to what's going to happen because I've seen the results of what could happen. And I'm out there thinking, why am I doing this? I joined the Marine Corps to get away from my mother's broom. I thought, geez, maybe my mother's broom wasn't so bad. Here I am walking in the jungle and scared stiff every day and wonder, what in the heck is going on with this whole program out here? And then you go back and tell you're fighting for your country. I'd be looking around trying to find out where in the heck is my country here, over here, because all I can see is... If we're in the high ground, you'd see, you know, you see trees and things like that, and on the plateaus. But in a jungle, it's thick. It's a subtropical area, and not only do you have to worry about the things that the Viet Cong might have said, but snakes and other things, and snakes and rats. They always bug me to no end. The mosquitoes, the heat, the smell. I never got used to it, and till this day, I would not go back.
Well, folks, we're going to take a break right here. Our last break of the program. You're listening to Veterans Radio right here in Talk 1600, and I have Dennis Powers with me, the Marine in Vietnam. We'll be right back right after this very important message. Okay, you're back on Veterans Radio. That's got to be... What that song?
It's pretty inspiring. I mean, it is very inspiring.
From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli.
Well, those are Marines. They get around.
They. How about that, Dennis? You folks get around?
We do. The land, sea, and the air.
Yeah, okay.
We deserve our nation's freedom and our honor.
Okay, we're talking with Dennis Powers, who was in Vietnam from 63 to 64, working some clandestine events, things that had to be done. And one of the things that you have down here, tracking arms and pilots coming into North Vietnam from Russia. Tell us about that.
You know, the biggest thing was, when you think about what was going on, you had... Not only do we have the makings, the beginning of what would be known as a Vietnam War, in starting, I think, maybe August of 64, but you had the sides that were being lined up ahead of time. In fact, this has been going on since 1954, maybe even during World War II. You had the Russians and you had the Chinese. They were supplying arms. They were supplying training. They were supplying different types of munition supplies to the North Vietnamese Army. The North Vietnamese Army would then use that Ho Chi Minh Trail and also another trail coming out of Cambodia where they brought in the goods off this off these ships, and they would supply the Viet Cong. That's how the Viet Cong were supplied all the time. They never ran out of munitions. Mm-hmm. No matter what we did, they had plenty of munitions. So the listening post was trying to find out when the armies would be coming. They knew who'd be sending them, but they didn't know when they would be coming in and through what method. They knew they'd be coming down the Ho Chi Minh Trail, and that ran through Laos and ran through Cambodia and then fed into South Vietnam at different places. Obviously, they had different jump-off points. And so they were trying to determine what arms were coming in so they could keep... We had a lot of Army personnel that were on the ground at that point in time. We did not have many Marines in Vietnam in the early parts of the conflict. We had some Air Force. We had a lot of chopper pilots over there. But the whole idea, they would interdict the supply runs to the Viet Cong that were coming in. And the only way we knew was through these listening posts that they were able to interpret what was coming on, what kind of arms they were, when would they be coming, which usually was at night. And there was a vast tunnel system that I don't think we knew about at that time for the arms and supplies to come through. But the main people, I mean, North Korea was supplying arms, as I said, the Russians, the Chinese, and there were probably others that I did not know about that were supplying arms.
Dale, you have something to...
Well, no, I was just, as I'm listening to this, it's the same story for almost the entire war, is because of this Ho Chi Minh Trail. In a neutral country, which was about as neutral as I can't even imagine a word that I could use. But, you know, these supplies were coming down in broad nightlight, daylight, and the Air Force and the Navy was over there bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail all the time. And these armies of North Vietnamese peasants would come down and rebuild the road faster than we could blow it up. And then the arms would come in through different areas of, you know, from I Corps all the way down to the Delta. And I know that we found a huge cache of weapons, enough rice to feed an army for a year, all these things in Cambodia. And it was just the idea of this thing just constantly, you know, going back and doing the same thing, because these guys, they didn't give up. The Viet Cong never gave up, no matter how much we blasted them, or even, you know, with what happened during Tet, we almost wiped out the entire Viet Cong cadres, but they just came back more and more and more.
Dennis, what do you think about that? What do you think inspired may not be the correct word, but what was behind that strident attitude? What do you, give us a comment on that.
Well, you know, you have to go back, you know, and I think go back to maybe 1803 and then on, when the British took over Siam, which is now Thailand, and then the French came in, took in mm-hmm. what we call French Indochina, made up of Laos, made up of Cambodia, and in Vietnam. They've always been oppressed. Then the Cambodians were oppressed by the Vietnamese. There's a lot of hatred going on there. So nothing really changed. The only thing that changed were the players. And everybody wanted to have their own independence. Everybody wanted to be in control. Then as a result of World War II, especially around 1950, the communists had come in and had infiltrated their doctrine into the North Vietnamese and into these little cadres, which we will term the Viet Cong, because it was a communist organization fed by the North Vietnamese army and by the communist teachings of Mao out of China. So there was nothing new. The French were in there. They were doing their job till World War II. World War II, the Vichy government took over, obviously, because of the Germans. They gave the Japanese permission to run down through Vietnam and to use that land. And then once they got the Japanese out, then they had to try and get the French to reestablish. But the people wanted their independence. The French could not reestablish. And we know the story. In 1954, they left. But then the Americans came in 1954. And we can do the job, and we can preserve the South from communists.
Mm-hmm.
But really, you know what, when you're there, it's really the people weren't really about that. They were about getting rid of foreigners. And we called them gooks, they called us gooks. And we were really the foreigners in that country. They were tired of having foreigners there. And the funniest thing was the people of the North Vietnamese, the North Vietnamese army, the Viet Cong, they were ruthless on their own people. As the Cambodians were ruthless on their own people,
oh, yeah.
Especially when the communists took over.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis, you know, I've always wanted to ask this, and I didn't see the Ho Chi Minh Trail. It didn't look like I-75, or what was it? What did it look like?
You can't imagine any kind of a road like you said, like I-75. It was, because they had to cross rivers, they had to cross swamps, they had to cross jungles. It was actually a trail that was really well marked. I didn't see it from the air, obviously. I was a ground pounder, and you're not going to see it, but I saw pictures of it. And it was really, I mean, there's no doubt as to where the Ho Chi Minh Trail was. I mean, everybody knew it was just a main traveled road comprised of bridges, comprised of trails, comprised of highways. They moved trucks down this, mm-hmm. down this road. For supplies, they did not have any railroad that I was aware of down this, but they moved everything else through boats, through trucks, through jeeps,
elephants.
But not through aircraft.
you stated, Dennis, that the Cambodians currently today, dating back to the Vietnam War, hate us. What was behind that?
I mean, they hated the Americans. They hated the Vietnamese, because the Vietnamese conquered them and made a colony out of them, is what I was told when I was there. And there was a group of people in Cambodia called the Khmer, which I think mm-hmm. became the Khmer Rouge at some point. But they had suffered terribly at the hands of the Vietnamese people. And so now was their chance to pay the Vietnamese people back. And that's why they remained neutral, so-called neutral, which was a joke, because they were very, very active in the war. But we had a policy which would put a fence up, and you hit the Cambodian border, and they could say, no, no, Hana, you can't go any farther. That's it. End of the ball game. And they can sit there and make faces at you, but you weren't supposed to cross that border at any for any reason. But that became not true as the war progressed, I'm sure.
Yeah, we would hit the border at low-level flight, and the Air Force would come over a guard on our radio and tell us that we were going across the fence. And we would have to tell them to be quiet.
nobody
can see us.
You have to remember, folks, there were absolutely, I mean, there's no border lines or what. So you really didn't know you were in Cambodia.
Well,
I mean, you knew by your...
Well, from our maps and everything that. And I mean, everything, you know, they would give us a coordinate. This is where you're going to go today. And that's what we would do. And then we would drop off these, you know, for long-range patrols, and they would go off and do whatever their duty was, and then they'd get in trouble, and we'd go back and get them, and invariably that they would get in trouble, and that meant that they were getting under attack, and so we'd have to pull them out while they're getting shot at.
Dennis, you're going to get the last word. We have, about a minute, Derek? Okay, we have 1 minute. Dennis, you get the final wrap. Go ahead. Tell us whatever you want to talk about.
Well, you know, I think perhaps the most important thing to understand for the American people is that when we came back, anybody came back during the Vietnam War, we were hated as the enemy. And we had no support from this country, really. We're over there. When we came back, we couldn't get served food in restaurants in this country. It truly was a barrier against the brave men and women that served in Vietnam who had really no choice. You get drafted or you volunteered, whatever, to serve your country, and yet you get mocked from your country. They try to kill you over there. You get home, and they might as well try and kill you on this, and you have to hide. You can't wear your uniform. You get eggs thrown at you, tomatoes, and as I said, many restaurants down in the South would not serve the servicemen. So we had to be in our cities all the time.
Well,
and that was a great tragedy.
Dennis, we got 10 seconds. Thank you very much for being on the program. Dale, thank you for being here. I want to thank everybody. Bob Gould, until next week.